So you can turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 3. On Sundays, we're making our way through this Old Testament book that was written by one of the wisest men who ever lived. He is embarking upon a quest to look at what is worthwhile under the sun. And as he's doing so, he's sharing with us his journal entries and his log as he's learning contentment and finding purpose in life. And last week, we looked at his pursuit of happiness as he pursued a number of different things in life to try to find meaning. And he discovered that if we pursue anything that is created instead of the Creator, we lose a sense of fulfillment and satisfaction. It's only in our pursuit of our Creator that we find that. And today, he's going to talk about the passage of time. His focus today is on seasons and the time frame in which we live in life. I don't know if you remember the first time you learned to tell time, or when you got your first watch. I remember that for me. It was a black Timex watch. It didn't have a little light, but it did have the glow in the dark hands and the glow in the dark numbers. And it was water resistant. I remember just being able to look at the different watches that were in the store, and this one's resistant up to 30 meters, and this one's up to 100 meters. And I mean, who swims 30 meters down underneath the water to begin with? But I remember when I was a little kid just looking at magazines. There was a store on the west side called Best at the time, and it was where Home Goods is. But I remember getting the Best catalogs mailed to us, and the sections that we would like to look at were the Lego section and the watch section, and just be able to pore over the different watches. And it's interesting. Humanity has a fascination with time. Carter is fascinated with time. He has an old watch of mine, and he likes to inform us of what time it is, or ask, you know, when the next thing is happening in life. There's something we're doing tomorrow, and we have not told him what it is, just to surprise him. And also, so he's not asking us every single day, you know, when is this happening? So don't ask him afterward. He doesn't know. So anyway, we are both fascinated with time, and yet we're also frustrated with time. It's something that we wrestle with. It's something that we have a challenge with. I mean, consider the stories about traveling in time. There's fascination. There's the classic Back to the Future, and then the number two and number three, which weren't quite so classic. There is the movie Time Bandits. I think that was back in the early 90s. Frequency, Interstellar, which is more recent. And not only do we consider, like, what would it be like to travel in time, to go forward in time, to go back in time, to stop time, but we wrestle with it. And Solomon here is wrestling with time. He's talking about it and how it's a part of life and what our perspective should be as we go through the seasons of life and as we encounter time in life. So we're going to look at this. We'll look at verses 1 through 15 today of chapter 3. And there's three sections we're going to look at. We're going to look at the threads of time, we'll look at our task, and we'll look at the tapestry. And you could title this The Grand Weaver. And I'm borrowing this from a person who has written a book by that title, Ravi Zacharias. Solomon said himself, there's nothing new under the sun. So every title I've ever probably used for a message, somebody else has probably used it. But the Grand Weaver. So let's go ahead and read verses 1 through 8 first. To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven, a time to be born, and a time to die, a time to plant, and a time to pluck what is planted, or harvest, a time to kill, and a time to heal, a time to break down, and a time to build up, a time to weep, and a time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to gain, and a time to lose, a time to keep, and a time to throw away, a time to tear, and a time to sow. A time to keep silence, and a time to speak. A time to love, and a time to hate. A time of war, and a time of peace. What Solomon's basically doing here is he's parsing time for us. If you remember back when you took grammar, and you had to parse paragraphs and sentences, and you had to identify the different components. What were the different things that were in a paragraph? So you've got nouns and verbs and adverbs and adjectives and conjunctions and all these other things. And what he's doing with us is he's dissecting time. He's pulling it all apart and he's saying there's all these different things that happen in time, all these different seasons of time. We like to think of time being in four seasons and that's it. Spring, summer, fall, and winter. And then a repeat of that. And certainly that's true of nature, but life for us is a lot more complicated. And Solomon demonstrates that by saying there's a lot of other times in life. Here he has 28 things that he mentions. Not just four. And these 28 things are in two contrasting lists. So there's 14 sets. And each one is saying there's a time for this, and then there's a counter time for something that's opposite to that. And so he is letting us know that life is a mixture of things. Just like there's a periodic table of elements, where there's 118 known elements, there's a periodic table of time. And Solomon gives us part of that periodic table here. He lets us know these are the different aspects of life in this world. And he begins with the bookends of life. He says in verse 2, there's a time to be born and a time to die. And none of us had control over the first. For us, you know, when we were born. Our parents maybe had some control. If they scheduled a C-section or something. But other than that, we had no control over the time in which we were born. I didn't get to pick that I was born 1980. I didn't get to look at the calendar and history and say, I think I want this year to be the year of my birth. All of you have a particular year that you were born and a day and a time. That was not something that we got to choose. A lot of these things in life we don't get to choose, but we have to respond to. Not only is there a time to be born, but there's a time to die. And we don't like to think about the second. And yet it's good to think about that. Solomon's writing this book in part to help us realize that we have a set period of time in this world and how do we live within that time frame. Hezekiah was a king in the Old Testament in the southern kingdom of Judah. And God came to him and did for him what he doesn't do for many people. He says, set your house in order because you're about to die. Not very many of us have that opportunity. And sometimes we may have a diagnosis from a doctor, so we know we have a certain set period of time. But the Lord gave Hezekiah that instruction, and Hezekiah wrestled with that. He asked for God for more time. He did not want to be content with the time that he was given. And so he prayed. He asked God to change things and to take away the sickness that he was sick with. And God granted it. But I wonder what life would have been like if Hezekiah had been content with the allotment of his life. Because there are different things. If you go back and you read, this story is recorded three times. It's recorded in the book of Kings, book of Chronicles, and in Isaiah 38, 39. Same story. Three different times, though, for its significance. And there's different things that happened in Hezekiah's life after he got an allotment of number of further years. There was pride in his life. He had a good reign, but it was tarnished because of some things that he did at the end. He had a son during that last time period when he would not have lived, and that son's name was Manasseh. Does anybody know anything about Manasseh? He was the most wicked king that Judah ever had. He was a cruel, wicked man. And if Hezekiah had not lived longer, Manasseh would not have been born. And there's other things. He showed Babylon all the spoils and the treasures of Jerusalem and Israel. And years later, Babylon never forgot that. And they came and they invaded Jerusalem and they took all those spoils. And so I just wonder how history would have turned out differently if Hezekiah had said, Lord, you're the author of time. And I'm going to be content with the days and the years that you've given to me. But we're like Hezekiah. We want to adjust and change and schedule things in a different way. And so Solomon lets us know here that there is a time to be born and a time to die. Then he talks about the dash between. If you've seen memorial stones or gravestones, there's 2 days and there's the dash. And that describes everything between those two dates. And everything after on this list is the dash between the day of her birth and the day of her death. And so he describes a number of activities and things that take place within those years and those days. He says there's a time to plant and there's a time to pluck. If you think of springtime, that is a time to plant. If you think of autumn or fall, that is a time to pluck and to harvest and to take in from the work that you have done earlier. Planting tends to be something that needs to be done earlier in life, where you put seeds in the ground, and then later in life you get to enjoy the bloom. I don't think planting is something that we ever should stop in life, but there's a time to plant and there's a time to pluck. Yesterday, we took our daughter Sophia out in our backyard and we had given her some different flowers and bulbs for her birthday. And we took some time to plant those seeds and to plant those bulbs. And so they're in the ground and we're just waiting. And over the next few months, we'll get to watch those things grow up. And then later, hopefully in July or August, we'll get to see some of the flowers and we'll get to pluck some of those flowers. And she loves when we go on walks to be able to pick out of different yards, if it's appropriate, different flowers as we are walking. And somebody generally planted those flowers, unless it's a dandelion. But Solomon says that life is full of planting and plucking. For those of you who are young right now in this room, I encourage you to take the time in your life at the beginning to plant, to invest into just your learning and discovery and sowing seeds that are good seeds that you can reap into the future. Solomon says it's good to plant. Time to plant, time to pluck. Then he says there's a time to kill and a time to heal. I don't think he's speaking of murder here, though that does happen in time. I think what he's talking about is that there's a time for justice and there's a time for mercy. We need both of those things to take place in life. There's a time to break down and a time to build up. There's a time to clear out the old. Sometimes that's sad and sometimes that's satisfying. How many of you have done demolition work? There's a degree of satisfaction in just taking a sledgehammer to a wall if you know that there's going to be a good outcome afterward. But also sometimes it's sad to see something that that's broken down or to break down something. It's good to start something new. Life involves both sledgehammers and framing hammers. And sometimes we're not anticipating when the sledgehammer comes or when the framing hammer comes into our life. But life is both filled, is filled with both. There's a time to weep and a time to laugh. And I don't think either of these things are usually scheduled either. You don't put in your calendar, laughter, 10 a.m. Or I'm going to weep on Tuesday evening at 7:32. These are things that happen in life, and it tends to be unscheduled. It tends to be in response to the punchlines in life, the painful ones and the pleasant ones. And I think we would like to kind of edit life where we don't have the painful punchlines, where we don't have the days where there's the news that we never want to hear. We would prefer just the things that are pleasant. And yet, Solomon says life is filled with both. And there's a response to both. There's a time to weep and a time to laugh. It's not all weeping and it's not all laughter. It's a mixture. There's a time to mourn. There's a time to dance. Life involves both sorrow and joy. There's a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones. Now, this sounds a little bit mysterious maybe for us in our culture, but if you think of the Israelites, and if you think of a stone, just think of a stone in general, it's something that's enduring. It lasts for a while. And to gather a number of stones would be to set up a memorial. To cast away stones is a picture of forgetting something, saying, I'm not going to continue to replay this in my mind. I'm not going to run the relay. I'm going to cast away these stones and I'm going to move on. But there's other times where we gather stones and we seek to not forget something. We want to remember it. Think of Joshua chapter 4 when the Israelites crossed from the wilderness into the promised land. And as they crossed the Jordan River, what did they do? They took some stones into the Jordan River and they planted those stones in there. And they took some stones from the Jordan River and they brought them to the other side and they made two different memorials. One was kind of a hidden memorial because it was going to be in the river, but one was a visible memorial. And both of those were to be reminders of the generations to come of that significant moment in their life. And so there are times in life where we are needing to forget something, where we need to move on. And there's a time when we need to remember. And there's a time to embrace, and there's a time to refrain from embracing. This word in the Hebrew, it's an expression of love. It means to fold or to take in. And in Song of Solomon 2:6, it's a word that's used of Solomon and his wife, of how she says, "My beloved embraces me. He's embracing me." But there's also times where it's good not to embrace and to keep some space. In Proverbs 6:27, it says, "Who can take in fire into their bosom?" And the illustration there is that a person who is committing adultery or involved in a wrong, illicit relationship where they're embracing someone that they should not be embracing, it's dangerous to them. So it's not comforting, it's damaging. And so in life, there are times where we need to embrace. There's times when we need to refrain from embracing. And I think we can apply this to people. I think we can apply this not just to people, but also policies and beliefs. What beliefs do we take and fold into our life? And which things do we see? You know what? This needs to be set apart from my life. This is not good to just draw into my life. There's a time to gain and a time to lose. Your translation might say seek. Time to seek and a time to lose. There's times when there's advancements in life. And there's times when there's setbacks in life. There's days that you win, and there's days that you lose. There's a time to keep, and a time to throw away. How many of you looked at your closet recently? You've kind of sorted through, do I need these things? Is this still useful in the present? And sometimes we just continue to keep and keep and collect. And there's a time to keep and preserve and realize, okay, this is something that's worth keeping around, but there's other times when it's good to toss. We do this with our children's toys. I do this with just church stuff. We have a church trailer, and it's nice to be kind of at this stage of life in our church where we're renting and we have limited space, and so storage closets are not being filled up with stuff. They're like, we think we might need that someday. Sometimes that can happen to homes or to businesses or different things, and to keep things pretty clean and not have too much clutter. In verse 7, there's a time to tear and a time to sew. You think of garments at that time, they were precious. And so if a garment was torn in that day, what did it signify? I think it would signify generally grief or great disagreement. You think of the high priest, when Jesus spoke to the high priest, what did the high priest do? He tore his garment in disagreement with what has been spoken. Sometimes people tear their garments in grief. Sometimes there's a time to part ways or to make amends, to move on or to sew up. There's a time for silence and there's a time to speak. It's probably illustrative of God to give us two ears and one mouth, and not one ear and two mouths. There's a time for both. I mean, some of you have a very easy time talking. Some of you like to listen. And yet all of us need to practice both in life. Those of you who find an easier time to talk, it's good to practice listening. Those of you who have an easier time listening, it's good still to be able to practice talking. I want to read a couple of cross-references relating to this one. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 23. Proverbs 15, 23. A man has joy by the answer of his mouth, and a word spoken in due season or in its time, how good it is. I'm sure you can think back on your life and just be grateful for some of those words in due season that were spoken to you by people in life. There's another verse I want to read in the New Testament, James. He has a lot to say about the tongue. I'm not going to look at chapter 3 where he focuses a lot on the tongue, but in James chapter 1, verse 19, he says, "Therefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath." There's a time when we need to listen, and there is a time when we need to express, when we need to share what's going on inside. And then he says, there's a time to love and a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace. These are all the sampling of threads that Solomon has discovered in life. The question is, what do we do with them? As we look at this list, okay, yes, that describes a lot of the things in my life, but what's the point? What do I do with this list now? And that's what he moves into, verse 9 and 10. He says, "What profit has a worker from that in which he labors? I have seen the God-given task with which the sons of men are to be occupied." So God's given us a task and time. Jump down to verse 12 and 13. "I know that there is nothing better for them than to rejoice and to do good in their lives, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God." Solomon says God has given us a task. It's a God-given task that the Lord has given us and assigned in life to be occupied with in relation to time. And he tells us what that is in verses 12 and 13. He says there is nothing better for them than to rejoice and to do good in their lives. So the first thing that we're to do in using time is we're to do what is good in time. And the second thing is that we are to rejoice in time. So what do these mean? To do good in time is to make the right choices in time. So if you looked at this list that we just read through, how do we know when it's the time to plant versus when it's the time to pluck? How do we know when it's the time to embrace versus the time to refrain from embracing? How do we know when it's the time to speak and when it's the time to listen? Which is good? We want to make sure we're choosing the right good. And I think the answer to that has to be in being in communication with the Lord. Now, he's the one who helps us to know what to do in time. He's the one who gives us discernment in time. There's a verse in Ephesians that says that we are to redeem the time, Ephesians 5:16. And we are to redeem the time because the days are evil. We're to make the most of the moments that the Lord has given to us. And so we are to be involved in doing good, but also we are to be involved in rejoicing. He says that we are to do good in their lives and also to rejoice. And what does this mean? I think this in large part means that we are to be content with time and not try to change it. I don't think that this is meaning that we are to be happy when we're sad. That, you know, when it's a time of mourning, that we should really be, you know, rejoicing in the form of laughter. But I think it means that we should be appreciative of the seasons and the times that God has given to us and be content that God is going to work out a plan. We're going to look at that here in a little bit. But we should be content. We shouldn't try to change time. Some of you have probably heard the French story of a little boy who was given by an old woman, I think it was a golden or silver spool. And she told him, "This is your time. And if you ever get into a place in life where you would like to just have time speed up, you're in a situation, you can pull out some of this thread and it will speed up the day." And so he took it and he was at school for a while, and then there was a boring, you know, season. And so he wanted just to skip to the end of school. And so he pulled some of the thread out. And all of a sudden, he's at the end of the day. So he started to practice this at every time. Life was sad, life was hard, life was boring. And before you knew it, he was an old man. And he went and he sought to try to find this woman who had given him this gift. And we can be like that little boy in life, where we only want to be selective of these different things and take the cuts of life that we like and cut out everything else in life. And yet, we should rejoice in all of it. God has given all of it, and it's all for a purpose. I think of when I was teaching in youth ministry, and maybe you remember when you were at that age, in junior high or high school. What do seniors tend to get in their last year? Senioritis, right? And eighth graders have the same problem. And some of them haven't, some of them don't. Some of them are content. And they realize this is the time frame that I'm in. And I'm going to make the most of this year, not just looking, I wish I was in ninth grade right now. I wish I was in college right now. Because if we start to live that way in life, guess what we miss? We miss the present. We miss what God is doing in the present. And we spend our entire years, all our days, looking to what is next and not rejoice in what is in the moment. And so, you can think of this in life seasons. I appreciate the seasons as they come. I'm ready for spring when spring arrives. I'm ready for summer. I'm looking forward to fall when it hits. I like aspects of winter. Not all aspects. But to be content in the seasons that God has given to us and not just wish, I wish it was summer right now. I wish it was spring right now. And to look for those moments. What is God doing in this moment? What is his purpose and his plan in this moment? Sometimes we can't see it at that time. Give you one illustration from one of those great books by J.R.R. Tolkien, Lord of the Rings. In the Fellowship of the Ring, there's a conversation between Frodo and Gandalf, and I'm sure some of you already know where I'm going. But they're sitting together in the mines of Moria. And Frodo says, "It's a pity Bilbo didn't kill Gollum when he had the chance." And Gandalf says, "Pity? It's a pity that stayed Bilbo's hand. Many that live deserve death. Some that die deserve life. Can you give it to them, Frodo? Do not be too eager to deal out death and judgment. Even the very wise cannot see all ends. My heart tells me that Gollum has some part to play in it, for good or evil, before this is over. The pity of Bilbo may rule the fate of many." And it's interesting, if you know the story, Gollum is a character who you have pity on, but he's a necessary part. At times you hate him, but at other times, you can sympathize. And he has part in the story. And there's things in life that God allows in our life like that, where there's a purpose, there's a plan. And then Frodo says this, "I wish the ring had never come to me. I wish none of this had happened." Gandalf said, "So do all who live to see such times. But that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us. There are other forces at work in this world, Frodo, besides that of evil. Bilbo was meant to find the ring, in which case you were also meant to have it. And that is an encouraging thought." And so there are times and moments where we can say like Frodo, I just wish I was not in this spot where I'm at in life. And yet, I think we can take heart that there are other forces at work in this world besides evil. We live in a world that's been infected by evil. We've been infected by evil. But God has a plan. God is working out something good. And so as we wrap up, we'll look at the tapestry. What is God's plan? Verse 14 and 15 and also verse 11. Starting in verse 11. "He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end." Verse 14, "I know that whatever God does, it shall be forever. Nothing can be added to it, and nothing taken from it. God does it, that men should fear before him. That which is has already been, and that which is to be has already been. And God requires an account of what is past. So he says in verse 11, he has made everything beautiful in its time. And he's also put eternity in their hearts. We long for, I think, a different time frame in which we live, because this is not exactly how life was intended to be from the beginning. I want to read a quote from a book called A Severe Mercy by a man named Sheldon Vanocken. And he lost his wife after he and his wife just had enjoyed many years together. And they had become friends with C.S. Lewis. And through that friendship, she had become a believer. And then she died. And then he's wrestling with that. And he ends up coming to know the Lord. And his book, A Severe Mercy, is basically his story. But he records this. He says, "If indeed we all have a kind of appetite for eternity, we have allowed ourselves to be caught up in a society that frustrates our longing at every turn. Half our inventions are advertised to save time. The washing machine, the fast car, the jet flight. But for what? Never were people more harried by time." And he wrote this like 50, 60 years ago. "By watches, by buzzers, by time clocks, by precise schedules, by the beginning of the program, there is in fact some truth in the good old days. No other civilization of the past was ever so harried by time." And yet it does seem that Solomon here is harried by time. So maybe it is consistent. And yet, why not? Time is our natural environment. We live in time as we live in the air we breathe. And we love the air. Who has not taken in deep breaths of fresh, pure country air just for the pleasure of it? How strange that we cannot love time. It spoils our loveliest moments. Nothing quite comes up to our expectations because of it. We alone, animals, as far as we can see, are unaware of time, are untroubled. Time is their natural environment. Why do we sense that it is not ours? C.S. Lewis, in his second letter to me at Oxford, asked how it was that I, as a product of a materialistic universe, that was his perspective, was not at home there. Do fish complain of the sea for being wet? Or if they did, would that fact itself not strongly suggest that they had not always been, or would not always be, purely aquatic creatures? If we then complain of time and take such joy in the seemingly timeless moment, what does that suggest? It suggests that we have not always been, or will not always be, temporal creatures. It suggests that we were created for eternity. Not only are we harried by time, we seem unable, despite a thousand generations, even to get used to it. We are always amazed at it, how fast it goes, how slow it goes, how much of it is gone. Where, we cry, has the time gone? We aren't adapted to it, not at home in it. If that is so, it may appear as proof, or at least a powerful suggestion, that eternity exists and is our home. That's Solomon's point. Eternity is our home. And in eternity, God will weave together all the strands of time and make a beautiful picture. And he will take the things that we look at in life as ugly or broken or hard, and he will weave that into his beautiful plan. If you remember, I think it was last week I'd mentioned that the word grievous was the same word as raw in Genesis that described the seven ugly cows of Pharaoh's dream, right? And then there's seven other cows that were beautiful or fine looking. That word fine, it's the same word for beautiful in verse 11 here. But Joseph needed those 7 years of famine alongside the 7 years of plenty, the other way around, in his life to fulfill God's plan. He could not have had just the 7 years of plenty and been restored to his family. Because what brought his family down to Egypt? It was the 7 years of famine. All the different challenging things in Joseph's life. Him being sold into slavery. Him being treated wrongfully by Potiphar and wrongly accused by Potiphar's wife, and then the injustice of being forgotten in prison. All this stuff, he could have become bitter through it, or he was patient, and he was patient, and he was able to see God had a beautiful plan in it. And God wove together all the ugly things into the glorious plan. And so at the end of Joseph's life, he was able to say to his brothers who had wronged him, what you intended for evil, God turned out and worked out for good. We know the New Testament verse, God works all things together for good to those who love him and to those who are called according to his purpose. And so there remains for us a mystery in the present. It says in verse 11, except that no one can find out the work that God does from the beginning. We can't see it in the present. We can't see how God's going to tie it all together. But in eternity, it will be known. Verse 14 and 15, he says, whatever God does, it shall be forever. God doesn't ever have to revise his plan. It's perfect. It never needs any addition. Nothing can be added. Nothing can be taken away from it. And then at the end of 15, God requires an account of what is past. This could simply mean that God pursues the past and he pulls all the different pieces of the past and he uses it all in his plan. I'd like to read one illustration and then we'll end with this. This is from Ravi Zacharias in his book, Walking from East to West. And he says this, if you travel to the north of India, you will see the most magnificent saris ever made, which is an Indian dress. The Varanasi is where the wedding saris are hand-woven. The gold and silver and reds and blues, all the marvelous colors threaded together are spectacular. These saris are usually made by just two people. A father who sits on a platform and a son who sits two steps down from him. The father has all the spools of silk threads around him. And as he begins to pull the threads together, he nods. And the son responds by moving the shuttle from one side to the other. Then the process begins again with the dad nodding and the son responding. Everything is done with a simple nod from the father. It is a long, tedious process to watch. But if you come back in 2 or 3 weeks, you'll find a magnificent pattern emerging. This is an image I always remind myself of. We may be moving the shuttle, but the design is in the mind of the Father. The Son has no idea what pattern is emerging. He just responds to the Father's nod. And that's our responsibility in life. That's what Solomon is seeking to tell us in these verses, is that we need to respond to our Heavenly Father's nod. In life, we have choices in those moments. Do we weep? Do we laugh? Do we sow? Do we plant? Do we go left? Do we go right? And there's a shuttle that's going back and forth, and it's being in relationship with the Father that we are able to work together with him so that he can create a beautiful plan out of the mess of life, the messiness of life. And so as we close today, ask you two questions. What are the loose threads in your life that you're not sure yet how God's going to use? Do you trust those threads to God? And then can you look back on your life and see some threads that were loose in the past that you've seen God tie together into something beautiful in the present? Maybe back then you had no idea what God was making, but he's used it in a good way, and you can see that in the present. It was a little illustration or picture of his future plan. My grandmother passed away back in, I think it was 2001, from Alzheimer's. And she had that disease for about 10 years. And her four daughters and my grandfather were in her bedroom. They knew her time was short. And they spent that last evening with her singing hymns and reading scripture. And my grandmother loved to play the piano. And so she played for many years for the church that she was part of up in Tacoma. And so she knew many hymns. And so they would just sing different hymns that they knew back in the past my grandmother would have been aware of and familiar with. But there's this verse that they were reading, Psalm 31, when my grandmother passed away. And in this psalm, there's a verse, verses 14 and 15 I'd like to read. "But as for me, I trust in you, O Lord. I say, you are my God. My times are in your hand. Deliver me from the hand of my enemies and from those who persecute me." Your times are in God's hand. And whether that is a glorious thing right now for you, that the times are good, or it's a season where there's fractured mess, we can trust that our times are in God's hand. He's appointed the boundaries of our life. He's sovereignly allowed all the details of our life, and he's going to make a beautiful thing out of it in the end if we will trust him as we trust him. Father, we thank you for your word today. We thank you that we can know through Christ that you take things that are bad and you can turn it into good. That is a story of the gospel. It's a story of your grace, where you're a God who takes the sin and the evil in this world, and you've overcome it by your great goodness. And Lord, I pray that you would help us to be people that just trust you with time, that we trust you with the moments that we live in, that you would give us discernment in those moments, that we would be able to know what to do when things happen, so that we can do what is good, and that we would be able to rejoice, that we would be content with our allotment in life, knowing that you're going to work out a great and a good plan. So thank you again for today, and ask that you would bless your people and bless us as we go out from here into this week. In Jesus' name, amen.